What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Game Dev Unchained, the number one game development podcast about game development and the lifestyle thereof. I am your host, Brandon Pham, and with me, a special guest, Brad Boyles. How you doing, man?
Very good. Not too bad. Not too bad.
All right. There we go. This is the part of the podcast where I ask our guest, which is yourself, a little bit about yourself, you know, the past, the present, the future. Let's do it. Go for it, man.
Well, cool. Sorry, I saw the flies buzzing around. I was like, huh.
Yeah, that's your place, not mine.
Well, it is a new place.
So if you don't mind kind of giving a little bit of background, you know.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Where you at? Where you heading?
Yeah, yeah. I got into this whole game thing kind of as a student, like a lot of millennials. Ended up out in Orange County, South Orange County, for the Art Institute. Rest in peace. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I graduated in 2010 studying game art. So, you know, really into like prop modeling and environment modeling and stuff like that. Towards the end of my graduation, or as I was graduating, made a lot of really good contacts, trying to just, you know, be that good student, go to all the dev hangouts, have beers with people that will have beers with me and whatnot. And that all ended up working out pretty well. I ended up learning about like an intern position not too far in the same area at Obsidian Entertainment to help out with a lot of just like basic game art janitorial stuff, you know, super entry level on the Fallout New Vegas DLCs. It's the last three. I didn't work on the first of the four, but the last three a little bit. Yeah, and it was really cool. I learned a crap ton. It was a sweet like first step in the industry as a little intern. Just doing all kinds of little stuff, color tinting trees, you know, fixing collisions, stuff like that. And then super, super small but fun art tasks. Did that for a little while. Another opportunity presented itself after a little bit of time there. Former colleagues, I mean, former teacher, professor / future colleague, ended up his studio over down in San Diego. High Moon Studios was looking for like an entry level kind of associate junior-y prop person to do, you know, some cool sci-fi proppies and maybe even venture out into like weapons and stuff like that, third person weapons for a Transformers game. And that was where things really, really got fun. I got to be super creative, work off of, you know, actual concept arts made by awesome concept artists and stuff like that. A little more outside of the janitorial stuff. So yeah, that was like a really cool little second gig. Yeah, I started just doing props and stuff like that. They were happy with my work. I was having a really good time. So I ended up doing like half or so of all the third person guns and props. Transformers was super fun. Then I was there at the stage when High Moon started getting assimilated into that that whole Call of Duty beast. Mm-hmm. Yep. That it is today, you know, being a COD studio and everything. Worked a little bit on Advanced Warfare, and then got the can. Good old, you know, you can't be a millennial in the game industry without getting laid off once or twice. Yeah. So the layoff was, you know, it is what it is. Everyone who does this knows what that's like, and chances are, if you do this, you do know what that's like. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of a shock because it was really cool. You know, my dream franchise, played a ton of Call of Duty in school and stuff like that. And so to be able to get a little bit of art shipped in with a COD game was a huge step, and it was really cool, but it was also really sad at the same time because it was just a little bit, and I really wanted to stay and kick booty on that project. But
you were a full-timer there, right? Or
I was full-time. Yeah, yeah. So I got hired on contract, worked a little over a year as a contract. They were happy. Ended up getting full-time, and then worked about full-time for a year. Moved over there after I went full-time, lived in San Diego for a year, and then, you know, got the layoff. Yeah. I think Activision's a little bit better about that nowadays. A little bit.
A little bit. Well, they're trying to hire as much as they can. Everyone's leaving on their own.
Looking like it.
And then eventually you went to Turtle Rock, and that's where we met. Like, I didn't realize how much our life were in so in sync. Like, you, I think you graduated after me. We didn't really cross paths while we were
at a little bit. Yeah. I was a little bit of a baby.
So, and then we were at Sledgehammer together at least a little time. You were there when I was there.
That was when I was at High Moon. So yeah, were at Sledgehammer when I was at High Moon, because you were there at Advanced Warfare, or no?
Yeah, Advanced Warfare and COD World War II.
That's right.
A little bit.
Yeah. By the time World War II is happening, I was back at Obsidian for my second stint there, working on Russian tank games for 4 years.
So you were able to stay in Southern California.
Yeah, pretty much the whole freaking time. Nice. Yeah, definitely. I'm not too much of like a mover, so I wasn't super wanting to like branch out of it. Unfortunately, you know,
privileged thing to say.
I know, too, like, much, right?
Not everyone gets to choose that. I guess.
There was a great chance that if I was asked to go to, like, you know, New York or something like that, I would have to say, I don't know if this is for me.
Well, you waited it out. You waited for a pandy to make this decision. now you can work anywhere, which comes to, like, I saw that you were your perma remote now. You're not even in South California anymore.
Yeah.
Where are you at?
Yeah. I so after being at Turtle Rock for the last, I think it'll be 5 years in May. I ended up, you know, pandemic's made everything expensive for everyone, of course. I got really fortunate. Didn't have my rent raised on me for 3 years. And all through the pandemic, I had a really cool landlord. We were his first tenants. But then, you know, this year he says he can't turn the lease back up. So I'm like, all right, way too expensive to stay there on an artist salary. So move up to Bakersfield, California. That's where I'm from, just a few hours north of the LA area. So yeah, just full-time here, working from home. They're really cool with it. I'll drive back down every once in a while for, you know, office get-togethers or whatever, and hangouts and meetings, meetings.
It's a two-hour drive, isn't it?
Yeah. Getting down to South Orange County, more like 3 to 3.5 if traffic's good to you.
Yeah, Bakersfield is I've never really stopped by Bakersfield. It's always been kind of like a flyby city.
Unless you really need
to. When I drive up to north.
You don't need to.
Yeah. Yeah. But it, I mean, overall, I'm super happy for you, man. It's you're one of the best weapon artists I know. Super humble, always positive. I love that about you. It's a nice energy to be around constantly, and especially kind of our history, kind of crossing path. It's always felt kind of cool to kind of see your growth and everything. And
likewise, man, it's been so cool seeing you and a lot of the upperclassmen at the time. You guys are always going to be my upperclassmen, you know. You guys were always so cool to the younger students and everything.
It's crazy. I mean, I think overall your experiences, there are things, but you're such a positive guy that you had fun, right? But with me, you know, there were also definitely positive and negatives, mostly negative, but like the positive was the networking, right, with the people. But that school in particular pumped out some pretty good talent, like that got placed at really high positions now at various companies. And so overall, it's too bad they couldn't hold on a little longer from the scam that they got caught with.
But exactly, I
think overall, like, it would have been a great successful campus with all, you know, such as yourself and many others that we know succeeded in the game industry that out of that program. It's unfortunate that they kind of closed up shop too soon.
Absolutely. But we got lucky with a lot of the professors and stuff and the people we met along the line. That's what I tell myself. I paid to go meet the people I met.
Yeah, exactly.
On the side.
Exactly. Yeah, it is. I do want to kind of talk to you about that, you know, the transition there. You have always been the office guy in office because you lived near enough. Now that you're fully remote, has that changed? Have you always been kind of used to working from home? Did you kind of do that off and on because of the pandy?
Definitely. Yeah. Like most studios, it was everybody worked from home, you know, and don't even get to for quite a while. Over the last 6 months or so, you know, kind of right as things really started getting better with the pandemic, you know, less mandates and stuff being enforced and whatnot, and the levels, of course, going way back down. We had a small group go back into the studio, and the group kept getting bigger and bigger and whatnot. And I was one of the first ones to try to get back in there as well when I could, because I got a little toddler at home now, and my sub 1,000 square foot condo was very hard to work full time with a little toddler screaming around behind you, as cute and fun as she is. So I was totally used to it. And, you know, so moving over to a new place with big space and doors to be able to close and get some work done. it's only gotten better. It's only gotten easier. And then as far as all the logistics for working from home, I mean, like so many other places, there's just been leaps and bounds on getting whole teams up and running digitally. And it's pretty dang smooth. So it's not too shabby, not too shabby at all.
Yeah. I do want to say, like, overall, and I've been kind of preaching this the last 2 years, overall, I want to say that game developers, in summary, have been really good working it from home, but that has not been the case, right? I feel like a lot more people are having a lot of trouble because, you know, the stuff they have to deal with at home. Mm-hmm. But if I have to conclude, I think Family Guys or gals especially have been a little bit better, especially people who have done freelancing on the side before are kind of used to pressure cooking time as a resource, right? So they have to be focused and complete work. And I feel the younger generation are having a lot more tougher time.
I would definitely see that and agree with it. Yeah.
I was there. You saw that? All right. Can you share some of the stories? Same thing. Okay.
I just meant, like, yeah, like I felt the same way. It was having worked in games for, I don't know, however long it was, 6, 7, 8 years or something, always being in a studio, always driving somewhere into the studio and putting myself in that creative mode. It was really hard at first to just like wake up and not want to just, you know, be a lazy millennial or something. It's like, oh, that's right. I got to actually log on and do the same hard work I've done every day during the week and everywhere else. And so there's definitely a weird, like, funk to get through at the beginning, I remember. But I mean, yeah, it's just about just getting through it and, you know, trying to get out of that and forcing yourself to kind of settle down and not get distracted as often and whatnot.
Yeah, it's definitely a new habit, and I'm glad a lot of people are doing it. But it is, I think because of the tech company is kind of starting the trend, a lot of people are going back in the office now. I do feel a good amount, like, over 70% are going to be back in the office eventually.
Yeah.
Just the way the companies are, say COVID's done, quote unquote, right? Get back in here. We're paying for these office spaces.
Yeah, exactly.
And then there's going to be a small percentage. I mean, I think most people were hoping 50-50, but I think it's going to be more than that, just to logistics. And there are a lot of benefits with being around creative gossip, right? Just being able to talk in person, and just based on what I'm hearing, not a lot of people are, I don't know, I feel like mature enough to kind of handle the work from home. Like, I would love to kind of say 100% everybody was efficient, but that sounded like more like 20% of people were actually efficient.
Might have been hopeful.
Yeah, it's very hopeful to kind of say that way. But, you know, I brought you in here because I've been loving your work. Especially for all the stuff that you guys been doing for Back for Blood. Weapons, it sounds like you've kind of had that attraction since the beginning of your career, right? You did a few things, but like weapons seems to be your focus. Did you always kind of know this? Was it something you experiment on one of your jobs where suddenly you're like, hey, was it a high moon? When did you particularly like, hey, this is my lane, I'm going all in?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely clicked at high moon. Doing the third person robot guns for Transformers. You know, again, going back and working with just some really amazing concept teams was another just driving force, just having these amazing concepts to work off of. And just it worked out really well, because, you know, there were plenty of times when I'm like, hey, I think I'd rather do it this way, push these shapes in this direction, and they're just like, yeah, do it, and just giving me other ideas. And it just, I really realized that I wanted to focus on just the weapons. But of course, you know, weapons, environments, props, that was always kind of my thing as you know, graduating. So Yeah, I would definitely say right around at that time. And then to go to like a tank game after that, where you get to make some really big guns, but they're guns that are also vehicles and whatnot. They kind of just further solidified, like, yeah, like these kind of big, kind of like, you know, hero piece prop weapon vehicles are kind of what I certainly enjoy the most. So to fall into a first person shooter like Back 4 Blood, as a weapons artist, and just getting to do like real guns was kind of just a bit of a dream position. So I was happy to run with it for the last little while.
Well, let's talk about kind of since Armored Warfare to now. Like how much of a difference in your process changed? Like of course there's new programs during this from I think you were actually too young to play with Crazy Bump. What was your first
Yeah, no,
like
actually,
texture
Crazy
for
Bump. I've
you
got
had
it
Crazy
listed on
Bump
some of
days? Okay.
theirs. Back
All right. So was it
running my filters.
it had to be before Advanced Warfare, right? Before Transformers, where you were
For
transitioning.
Crazy Bump?
Well, what was your texturing software around these
Oh,
types of
yeah,
games?
totally.
Yeah.
No, it was pretty much primarily. Well, it's interesting. It's kind of funny. So it was Photoshop all throughout school and everything. So a lot of these like weapons you'll see, like the older ones, the Rhino and the Vector and that 1911, you know, that's kind of all just classic Photoshoppy, finding your metal textures, overlaying in Photoshop, trying to just nail that PBR stuff all by hand and
This is
whatnot.
before
No,
Dedo and
yeah,
Ender.
this is right before all that stuff.
Okay.
I think it was. Yeah, it was right before all that. But then that was definitely the next step. So I guess taking a step back on the Transformers stuff, we have, and they still do. Mike Brown is an amazing principal artist over there. Guided me so much through awesome artness. He pretty much wrote his own Quixel kind of procedural texturing. You know, it essentially was the Indo or the Dedo or whatever that Quixel suite was that,
Yeah.
you know, textured out of Photoshop. Well, I was doing that like before Quixel put it out there, just based off of the internal studio's tools. So that was a huge step. So I didn't have to spend time, you know, painting all the little scratches on all the edges and stuff like that. We just did it procedurally. Procedurally worked really well for a third person weapon since you weren't seeing it in super close detail. So that really enabled me to just model, bake, texture like crazy, like really, really fast. You know, lots of symmetrical things on these shapes. So I only ever modeled half a gun or whatever, half of a thing, just mirror it over. So it was actually, even though some stuff might kind of look complex, I got it down to where, you know, most of these assets I think were done in about a week.
Wow.
So that's from like block out to textured and in game, like handed off to the animators, ready to go. And again, that week is after kind of fine-tuning things. So that was after a few weapons. But yeah, so you know, the whole like Photoshoppy, all by hand, manual brunting it all through school, a little bit of my early career, you know, through Fallout, still like that, just regular Photoshoppy stuff. And then yeah, I get into the studio and I find out, oh man, there's like tools that can texture this stuff procedurally for us. That's pretty cool. So then when I end up at Obsidian, it is Quixel, like Quixel suite that we used. So we use that on a lot of the early tanks. Oh yeah, a little bit of environment stuff.
Is this when you were you there when Larry was there too?
I
No.
think so. Yeah, I was there during that. I was pretty much there through the entire production of that project. Like I was hired on
So
very
much
early
synergy.
on. Yeah, I was actually hired on as an environment artist. And then put over to the weapons team after I begged and cried a lot.
How many set of
No.
maps? Because I'm always been because environment we're always kind of told to like use as little
Oh,
amount
yeah.
of materials as possible, but like
For
with
sure.
weapons and then to characters, it seems like every eyeball is like 4096, and I'm looking at it. Is weapon and I always felt like weapons are in between. Like how many sets of maps do you guys
I think
have?
some of these tanks went pretty crazy, like anywhere between 7 and 10 on some of these vehicles. Yeah, they weren't all 4K. I think the only thing that ever got a 4K map in game was the hull, so the big kind of body, the big chunk of body. But then, you know, we had separate texture sets for everything else. So you had one for the barrel, you had one for the tank tracks, you had one for the turret, you had one for all the little boxes and stuff like that. Spoiled. Stuck to it. Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, it's like that even on weapons today and stuff like that.
How much have that increased, or has that changed?
You know, I wouldn't say it's changed too much, actually.
It's just bigger size, like 40, 96, 81, 92, or?
Oh, definitely no 8K. No, that would be nice. But definitely, I've never worked on a project where I was able to put anything bigger than a 4K mat. I'm sure it's out there. But yeah, I mean, most of our guns are anywhere between like 2 and 6 texture sets, I'd say. For most of the like kind of larger like assault rifles and stuff like that, but if it's smaller, yeah, it can go down to like 2.
And then are they pretty much to a science now, where each map is dedicated to a part of the gun, or is it different for each gun?
Yeah, it kind of depends on the artist, but for the most part, yeah, we will work the same, and we'll definitely, you know, the front section of the gun, the front handguard and the barrel will always have a chunk of map, and you know that map might be smaller than the iron sights, even that are right up in your face and whatnot, that we want to have the most detail. We're always thinking that classic COD, like give all the texture resolution, or not all, but as much as possible to what's in front of your face, and feel free to go lower if you need to save UV space down the line at the front of the gun.
So first person, back of the gun, most important detail.
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
That's kind of becoming less and less these days, because now, you know, guns are everywhere, being put in like model viewers. Yeah, yeah. And you can even rotate it in game. So we kind of stepped back from that to a degree, but that's still always going to be there.
Overall, just make it look good from all angles.
Look as good as possible at all angles. Yeah. 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 So, I mean, like after the Quixel stuff, it was about halfway through my time on the tank team. Going from, that was when Painter became like a big thing, and I was pretty excited to try it. The IS-7 was my first dive into Painter. That's the green, can I draw on this? I don't know, it's on the right hand side.
Right hand
side. Keep going right there, next one. Yeah, that guy, that's the IS-7. So that was like, that was my first soiree into Painter. And it was just freaking amazing, man. I literally, it was pretty cool. I got to kind of just take a full week to just dive in to the new program, and, you know, check out all their tutorials. Painter, right off the bat, I remember they had some great like tips and tutorials, and they've always been great about doing that. Hopefully it's still that way now that it's Adobe.
Yeah, at this point, you must have kind of experimented with 3D painting programs. I forgot which ones were like, I know Marie was for the film and effects, right? And I played with that a bit. I was like, oh, that was cool potential here. But like, it definitely was not for gaming pipeline. But there was other programs before that was promising, but you know.
Yeah, Quixel. Quixel was doing it. Okay. I was doing it in Quixel. Even before Quixel, I had even toyed around with the Photoshop. Photoshop was always able to take 3D models and paint directly on them, but it was bad. It was not a super great experience. It'll be definitely, you're trying to do something like this.
Yeah, they kind of slept throughout that 3D painting. Yeah,
they're like, Photoshop will just take us everywhere. That's all we ever need.
Eventually, they bought Substance.
Hopefully. Yeah, exactly. Look at where we're at now.
Yeah. Oh, this is awesome.
But yeah, honestly, the jump between from like having to be in Photoshop and using Photoshop plugins like Quixel to Painter was easily, I would say, for me personally, the biggest thing to happen to me in my pipeline in working in game art. Other people might feel differently about modeling softwares. I'm kind of behind on that. I'm still modeling in Max and Maya. I need to check out the Blender and all the get back into the whole CAD modeling stuff with the Fusion. I did a little bit of that in high school, but ever since then, it's just been polygons. But
yeah,
Fusion 360.
I mean, that's huge for you weapon guys, especially. Mm-hmm. Well, anything hard surface. I try playing it, but I mean, I can see the advantage, like anybody, right? If you're proficient at a program, you just look awesome doing it eventually, and you got to figure out these shortcuts to kind of make your workflow work. Yeah. But it was too much like AutoCAD to me. It's like, hey.
It is. That's exactly what it's meant for. Yeah.
Yeah.
they're planning on you, at least when the program was built, it's like, you're going to print this out, or this is going to go into a CNC machine and get, you know, cut from metal. Like, you could make straight up real guns in these programs and get them printed out that way.
But it definitely creates an opening where, like, hey, if we can take some of these tools, and probably Pixelogic is trying to do that with ZBrush. They're making a lot of effort, but yeah, there isn't just, it's not very, I don't know, gamer focus just yet.
Yeah, not quite. Yeah. If you do any sort of Fusion stuff, you've got to have some pretty creative workflow stuff where you're bringing that file into ZBrush and making a real high poly out of it.
Yeah. It's a bother.
It is a lot. Yeah. That's definitely one of the reasons why I haven't just gone full into it, but, I definitely want to look into it.
Yeah.
Blender's looking pretty good though.
Blender seems to the be all end all. If you want to.
Yeah, a little bit of everything and doing it well.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So like I do see this a lot too with you weapon guys, right? Because I feel like you know, ZBrush, you guys don't touch ZBrush as much as I thought you would. So that's like I think a common misconception where, you know, of course they made a lot of strides with the hard surfacing model that TinkDeeks through that, and they continue to do so with every update. It seems like they're really focusing on making that available. But whenever I talk to a weapon guy, it's like, no, I don't touch that. so what's your main reasoning for that? What is it, just the workflow is so weird? It's not just intuitive just yet?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that reason will be a little different from artist to artist. But when it comes to a lot of the definitely like, I'm a hard surface gun person, and that's mostly what I do, which is definitely me and a large group of other artists that get paid to do what we do. You know, you just never used a lot of ZBrush. So while I definitely loved it and enjoyed learning to sculpt and stuff in school, I never really did much ZBrushing professionally as a hard surface artist. I never found, when I did do stuff, you know, I never found anything that was going to be like, oh man, this is so much faster, so much better. ZBrush's menu, you know, it's definitely a weird UI and program to kind of get into, with it being so different than everything else. They don't follow any standards that anyone else does, of course. So I think it's just a little bit of all these other things. You know, I just, since I never was a person that's like, okay, characters, you know, creatures, organic sculpting, this is what I want to do, this is what I want to get paid to do all the time in video games. When you get that, you know, you're definitely going to get ZBrush and you're going to get good at it, you're going to get super proficient at it. But that just never really settled with me. I just was, you know, I was taught kind of a specific hard surface workflow regardless of what modeling suite you're in. It's that classic kind of, you know, lay down your constraining edges on your model, throw that kind of smooth modifier on there and just do it all by hand and get it looking exactly how you want. And that workflow for me has kind of always just prevailed, even when I've dived out of it a little bit and looked into other ways or using, you know, plugins and stuff that's just going to take my blockout model and try to make it nice and high poly without the added work and steps of laying out down my constraining edges and getting exactly where I want. I mean, I'm so comfortable with that. I can do that so quickly that it's just like second nature. I feel like the hardest part for me in any like asset that I'm doing is always the block out, the very beginning, you know, nailing these proportions and shapes so that they're pretty close to what they need to be in real life before you've even worried about getting the high poly done, making sure the edges are all nice and round and smooth where they need to be, and any sort of high poly details are going to get baked down to the normal maps. So that always takes me the longest time. And then from there, it's all just kind of busy work, like, you know, unwrapping and high poly modeling, laying down your constraint edges and getting those curves exactly how you want, just kind of becomes second nature when you've done it enough. I just haven't dived into ZBrush mainly because I just haven't needed to for a big reason. Painter has gone so far with what you can do with like just height maps and, you know, painting height data. You can really fool, I feel like, a lot of stuff that people would think could only be done Or would normally have only done like sculpting in a high poly, and you can do that like all with just height map info and some really amazing designer, substance designer. You get a really good, texture artist and materials person in there, and it's like, oh yeah, this is all nodes and just stacking and layering height maps the right way. And it's like, are you sure? That looks like an amazing, that would have been an amazing sculpt. I want to see your sculpt. You're lying. It's like, no. So yeah.
No, I
Hope that
get you.
kind of
I
answered it.
it's it, it no, it's the same. I share the same sentiment because with props, it's the same thing, right? I mean, in my career, I mostly do world building. So proportion and block out is so important to get that mathematically correct. And ZBrush just doesn't have that
Yeah, that's
graphometer
another
to kind of measure
great point.
things. Yeah. Like it's you just got to free space it. And then, only proportion-wise, you can have it in relation of itself. But like, how many times we start something in ZBrush and import it, and then we got to scale it up 100 times, right?
Yeah, exactly. I was just about to say, I get all my scale right at the blockout stage. When it's in max, it's going to be exactly, I'm going to make sure I get it right in there right before anything, so that when that gun ends up in the character's hands, it looks like it's the right size and everything. Like,
And that's so
you can
important,
do all
right?
that so well with kind of just your basic out of the box Maximaya.
Yeah, it sounds like Blender solves a lot of those issues, just being able to do all round sculpting and stuff if you have to, just the bare minimum. So you do a lot of guns. I'm guessing you are a gun owner as well. Like what? So what's the deal here? Like how close to reference do you have to be to kind of be like, to be awesome at your job here?
I mean, it's really tough. Most people aren't gonna know how freaking close we got these guns to like real life, you know what I mean? But I think that's part of what helped me get the job. They asked me that question in my interview at Turtle Rock. They're like, oh, so you're applying for a guns position. You like guns, right? I'm like, yeah. Like, do you own some guns? I'm like, well, yeah, of course I own some guns. I
Of
like guns. This
course.
is America. And that actually worked out to my favor. They liked that, not only did I, enjoy doing the stuff in 3D and stuff like that, but this was something I did on the side. I go out to the range when I can and whatnot, and I get really into these. A good amount of all these guns in the game are all guns that you can kind of buy in real life. Now, obviously, you don't get the fully automatic versions, but you can buy like legal California, like civilian versions of these that only shoot one round per trigger pull, like an AR-15 and whatnot. So to have like some of these just in my safe and be able to just take them out, disassemble them, take pictures of any part I need to, was really nice. It definitely helped. There's another really cool software out there. I guess it's like a game. It's called World of Guns, and it's the
World of
same
Guns.
thing. Yeah, I don't know if you, it's just a huge like database of like these weapon 3D models, and they contract artists out to make them very close and as close to real world as possible. You can take them apart all in 3D space and whatnot. Yeah, so I mean, it was definitely cool to be able to look at a lot of these and just look right at what I have and be able to do that. But yeah, definitely, I definitely would say that if you wanted to do this kind of thing, it's gonna work out even better. Ah, there it is. Yeah, World of Guns. I think I dropped like $50 to own the whole
Dude, I
game
didn't
and
know
all
about
future
this.
content. Oh, it's insane. Any gun that I didn't own, pretty much, that I wanted to see super
Can you
realistic models
VR
of,
these?
I
What's the
don't think
game
they have a
like?
VR
Let's just say,
integration.
let's just watching.
Yeah, it's just right in your browser. I don't think, I mean, that'd be pretty cool. But yeah, so if it's a gun that you've never held in your hand before, or maybe it's something a little harder to find decent reference of, and you want to know what the bolt looks like on that side when you rack it back, and what kind of details you need to have in there for a video game to at least make it pass as like real, you can kind of hop in this program and check it
What an
out.
amazing
So,
resource, Dan, dude.
oh, totally. Yeah. Weapons artists, if you're not going to get into the real thing for whatever reason, at least get World of Guns. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I
they're
feel like
like
that's
he
so important. I mean, it makes sense, right? The same with characters. They're always having those little dolls around their desks.
Yeah. Posing their maquettes and everything.
Yeah.
And,
So,
yeah.
oh, they do have a gun range then. Good.
Yeah, a little gun range to kind of see how it is and if you were to use that gun. There's another one. Oh, you were asking about VR. If you want to
Yeah.
see some of the most, some of the most realistic guns you can play with in VR, hot dogs, horseshoes, and hand grenades.
That's
That's
the game.
the VR bee's knees. That's the game. It's kind of like this, only not quite to the mechanical degree where you can disassemble them and see them in these X-ray modes. It's more about just picking them up and using them in VR. But it's almost a sim. They're incredibly realistic. If you grab an M16 in World of Guns and you pick it up and you don't know how a real M16 works in real life, you're gonna have to figure it out. Because if you don't rack the bolt the right way and then do this the right way, the gun's not gonna work. So they make it really kind of like that. Then they also do some flashy shit like this. It's pretty fun. Silly little I don't know why
Yeah.
where they got the name hot dog for shoes and hand grenades, but
Well, it's catchy, that's why.
it is, yeah.
Like most, I didn't grow up around guns, so at first you're like, oh, I'm naturally, if you don't know what it is growing up, you kind of are a little bit hesitant around it. But going to gun ranges and feeling the raw power in your hands,
It's something,
like I
it's
get it.
something.
Oh my God, it takes 2 seconds. It's like, and it's I think the first thing that was shocking to me is like, oh man, this shit is fucking loud, and it's
Oh
so
yes.
powerful with the kickback. And it's like
Even with
growing
their
up
even yeah.
with Counter-Strike, right? I was such an idiot. Growing up with Counter-Strike, with different weapons, you feel different. Like the Deagle is more powerful than the Scout or whatever, right? And so I grew up thinking like that. It's like, oh, I want the most powerful gun because it'll kill faster. It's like, no, every gun will kill you. you don't have to worry about that. But
Pretty
you
much.
like playing with the different guns and gun ranges is like, oh man, this will literally blow you up if it pierces you.
Oh
Definitely
yeah.
will hurt more, it feels like. I think it's one of those nice things, I think, educational wise, that people just need to be around. It is a technology that isn't gonna go away,
Oh yeah.
and it's so important to know how to function around them.
Yeah, even at
If
very
anything,
least to know
yeah.
how to if you don't if you find one and you don't want to touch it, know how to drop that magazine, make sure it's safe, make sure
Right.
the gun's not going to go off if someone was dumb enough to pull the trigger without intending to or
Exactly.
something like that. Yeah, totally. But yeah, I mean it's really cool. I know even in previous projects, I think it was for, sorry, my dog in the background, hopefully it's not too loud. I forgot what project it was, but the other weapons artist I work with, it might have been for Evolve. Maybe it was something beforehand. I don't remember, but they got to go hang out with I think it was some sort of division of the armed forces. They went and got out to like an army base and they got to shoot kind of the real deal. And same thing, a lot of people just had the same kind of epiphanies, like, oh man, I've never seen any of this stuff like in real life before. I've been around a gun when it's fired, and so it's very eye-opening. And so it's pretty cool when studios will take you to do that, take your teams. I think they took the audio team out there as well to actually get some raw sounds recorded. So it's always a good opportunity to jump on if you have the chance to.
Yeah, I think there was a great time period where research like that was more encouraged. I do feel like we're entering kind of like an era where it's like Google Games.
Oh yeah, it's less important for sure. You can
Yeah.
literally just get everything you need off the internet to some degree or
Yeah,
more.
so like to I think it, to a point where it is a problem, right? We're not vacation scouting, not vacation, location scouting anymore as much. I mean, the internet is a powerful tool. It obviously is convenient, and it's the next best thing if you don't have access to those opportunities. But I feel like a lot of games now, myself included, have been mostly relying on internet resources to kind of visually tell this story.
Yeah.
I think a detriment, man. I feel like it feels, you can tell if it feels fake, to a
Yeah.
certain degree, to at least like people who are around guns a lot. Or, and I'm not saying that you have to shoot zombies or shoot a person to know what it feels like, right? But
Of
I'm
course, yeah.
saying there are things like, you know, as an environment artist, it'd be nice to kind of visit these places, get the context, the textual thing that you're trying to convey digitally, that overall helps. You know, we have mega scans now, we have like photogrammetry. You know, we don't even go out anymore. I mean, a lot of this bigger studios, yeah, they have their own team, but even then, it's just like you're kind of leaving it up to your texture team to kind of capture all that data for you, right?
Yeah, I'm sure that's become even worse with the whole pandemic thing,
The
but you know,
pandy
maybe it'll get a
thing.
little bit better now, but now that things are kind of slowing down and easing up. But yeah, it's a great point.
Well, do you yourself see that as you're playing kind of through these games? Do you kind of get a sense of that, knowing kind of if the team went through research and development, or a
Oh
gun
yeah, all
feels
the
off
time.
all the
Oh
time?
yeah, incredibly easily. There's even with our game, there's a there's always going to be like a crowd of people, and they're probably going to be louder than everyone else, even if they're a very small minority. But you know, we strive for good feeling kind of CODish gunplay, you know, because that's what a lot of people are going to know. And COD has come a huge way in pretty accurately depicting how a lot of guns work, even down to stuff like a regular reload versus a tactical reload and what that even means and what that entails. Most people have no idea what that even means that I just said. And that's something that we didn't get a chance to incorporate into our game is tactical reloads. So essentially, like on an AR-15, you know, if you spend the entire mag and you shoot out all 30 bullets out of that magazine, the bolt is going to lock back. So when you put a new mag in, you have to hit a butt to get it to engage again. That's a regular reload, a fully reload. Well, if you've shot that gun and you haven't emptied out every bullet in that magazine, the bullet's going to be ready to go. So you don't have to take that extra step of pushing that thing. So it's all these little like nuanced types of things that we didn't get to implement. So, I mean, that's kind of more focusing on the animation side, but even down to the modeling side, there's just so many games out there where, you know, people who kind of know guns will look at it and be like, oh man, the proportions of that AK are so whack. Like that, you know, that back grip, why is it so big or so long? It's not how it's supposed to be or whatever. But so yeah, I mean, there's always going to be kind of crowds that can spot that stuff and that'll pipe up about it. But they're usually in the minority just because, yeah, most people don't kind of understand because they don't look at these things in quite that much detail and whatnot.
Yeah, I do think that you can feel it though. Like even with me, I'm not around guns that much, but there's certain games that just rise
Oh,
above
I'm sure if
others.
it's bad enough, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a collection of things too. Like everything's got to at least be good enough some way. Your animations, your visual effects, the placement of the visual effects, all that stuff, the model, you know, if something's lacking, it can really bring down just maybe the gunplay as a whole. So it was great though. We had a great weapons team. So pretty stoked with how it all turned out, given all the limitations we had, the time we had to do it.
No, it looked great, man. Like like going through these, we're looking at guns right now from Back 4 Blood. Like what was the normal timeline here from concept to finish?
Yeah, it's kind of hard. Through the main part of production, we actually switched things up that worked out really, really well in our favor. So at the beginning, after we got one or two guns modeled and textured, which I'm trying to think back to when we actually did it all in one block of time. I mean, I'm sure some of them ended up taking almost a month or so to get through like the whole pipeline, between most of the team and whatnot. But what we ended up doing, which was really more beneficial to the team, was we just, you know, building Back 4 Blood on the ground up out of the box of, you know, Unreal 4 with literally nothing. we just had to start from scratch. So it's like the big initiative became, tons of good blockouts. So not like a proxy where it's just like kind of close, a fully fledged blockout. Like this is going to be pretty much how the gun's going to sit in your hand in game. So, but without all the high poly and then all the textures and stuff done. So we hit that really, really hard. So it was just spending a week or two, depending on the guns. Some things can get done a lot faster, depending on the size and whatnot, how much details on it. But we just hit that really, really hard for a long time to get most of the guns that were going to be in the game just blocked out so that everyone else had something to work on. The animators had something pretty close to what it was going to be to animate. Same for effects, and just everybody else who would need to touch these had something to work off of. And once that was all done, the weapon art team got to go back to these nice blockouts and do them for real and give them a nice high poly model and get the textures in. But at that point, everyone else was already doing their stuff, so you got to see the game come together a lot at the end, as far as like the guns, because we were just looking at these gray models forever, and more and more gray models, more and more gray models, and then finally, like the last, however so much time, half a development or less or more or whatever it was, it's just like everything comes together. It feels like it comes together really fast, but you're really just seeing a culmination of everyone's work just getting plugged in and put up at the same time, and it worked out really, really well. I can see us doing it that way more in the future.
You did like all the guns, bro.
it's about half. It's about half.
Yeah, it's a lot. Oh, God.
We're just a little team, man. It's two weapons artists. We didn't outsource much through most of the project until the end, when we were kind of needed really some big help. Yeah. You look at like a COD team and you look at their guns, it's like, 7-8
It's army,
like 7-8 people just in house, like working on guns, and then you've also got,
vehicles, people,
teams of outsource, like, so to try to get to that level in all aspects with a super tiny team was a really fun challenge.
So what were the shortcuts that you had for yourself? Was it the modeling or texturing that
really texturing? Texturing was where we made up a lot of time. You can notice a lot of these guns, their base models. It's just a lot of kind of gray metals and stuff like that. So you got to just reuse a lot of the metals and smart materials and textures that you've already created to just, you found something you like, slap it on the next model, you tweak it a little bit, maybe change things up, and then you just go from there. But yeah, texturing was really where things started just going fast after we developed a workflow that worked for us and some materials that worked for us well and stuff like that. Making these skins, it's just like, okay, just paint an American flag and kind of overlay it on the textures you already had. So, I didn't have to like repaint all the scratches and stuff like that when I did the skin. It was just kind of paint an American flag, delete the edge wear so that you get some cool grungy stuff shining through, and there you go. You have a sweet little custom flag skin or whatever. It was definitely the big time saver there once we got that. Blockouts never got faster.
Yeah, that's great, man. That's crazy. Oh, I love this one. The health.
These were fun. The legendaries were fun. This was the first chance that the weapons team actually got to work with some concept arts from the team. So, they knew we were going to be working off of guns we already had in the game. So it's like, what do we do to spice this up a little bit, make it look more legendary? It's like, cut out some teeth, give it this cool, like, old hood ornament type devil man in the back, wrap some barbed wire, they explored some concept iterations. And so that was really fun.
Yeah, it looks like you had fun with this one.
that was probably the one I had the most fun with. But
so how often when you're working with other departments, like the rig and the animation, like, it is it collaborative, or are you kind of like asked to pretty much serve them? Like if the rigger comes back and says, hey, you got to fix this or else it won't look right or whatever, or the animation.
Yeah. There wasn't really a whole ton of that, mostly just because since these guns are, mostly all based on guns that are real life, we made them to function how they were going to work in real life. Admittedly, some of our animators and stuff, weren't super into guns, so they had a lot of kind of catching up to do, but they were awesome. They asked so many questions all the time. It was, hey, Brad and Sean, can you walk down over here? I've got this new reload and I want you guys to see it and tell me what you think about it before I even bother showing it to my lead or anyone else on the team.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of that, and I couldn't have been happier with how it worked out, to be honest, because they totally gave a shit. Like, they didn't want to just throw in whatever they felt was good enough and call it done. They were like, okay, well, we understand. And there was a lot of give and take. There were plenty of times where we're like, oh, it actually doesn't quite function this way.
Didn't just whip out your gun at the office and it's like, no, see here, this is how you take it in the magazine.
Here's how it goes. I mean, we had some airsoft guns, but no, yeah. the real ones stayed at home. it was fun getting some like airsoft guns and replicas and stuff for the studio and to bring those over and have those laying around. Wouldn't be a weaponized so without some Nerf guns and some airsoft guns sitting around to play with. But
yeah, like I went airsofting as a kid, and there was an instance where there was an electrician in one of our group that was working on a office. So the office was cleared out, and when we showed up, it was like full on. It was like CS Office, basically, from Counter-Strike, right?
The level,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, and he had these, you know, I guess they've been doing this for many weekends. All these BB guns are, BB bullets are on the ground. I remember going, they even had like a basketball gym. It's a pretty big office. And so it was like a 6 versus 6. And I was hiding up on the second floor in the basketball court. It was like in the custodial closet or something. And I just straight up punched a drywall just to make a hole. It was so fun, and I loved That's it. I love awesome. Airsofting over paintball because of how they are like replicas.
Yes, I felt the same way. Yeah, I can never truly get into
cool
paintball.
Holding it right.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, but it is more difficult. You have to be very honorable to call yourself out and stuff. Exactly. So that gets frustrating once in a while, but. Yeah, stuff like that. Nice. Yeah, it's just naturally. I think as kids, you kind of naturally like guns, but from games. At least for me, it was from games.
Mm-hmm. Oh, same. Yeah. First-person shooters were always easily my favorite class of video games, even before I knew I wanted to make video game art for a living or have anything to do with video games for a living. It was like, yeah, these are fun. This is what I liked. I can still remember some of the first shooters that I ever played on a PC. How much my parents were not cool with that. These are the parents that let me shoot at 22, you know, when I'm 10 years old. But when it comes to the real deal, or, you know, shooting all the blood and the violence in video games, that was where it's like, hey, no, you're too young for that, young boy. So I had to do that in secret.
Now get your 22 and let's shoot in the back. All right.
Yeah.
Well, when it comes to, you know, you've always worked on both realistic and fantasy guns. What is the most important thing to kind of make those sci-fi guns based on reality? Like, because obviously when we look at these games, they go too fantastical, where it just feel the best way I could describe is weightlessness. There's a weightlessness to it when I'm playing like a certain, well, it's certain. Halo games nowadays are better, but there were certain guns in Halo where I was like, all right, I'm just playing with a Nerf gun at this point.
Yeah, so what it's was just the, not like that.
Yeah, so what's the key thing there where you can't, is it like a balance of 50% of realism and another 50% of fantasy? Like what is the feel there?
It's definitely, I feel like a lot of different little things. A lot more can just go and anything goes, or a lot more you can get away with when it comes to the fantasy guns, like stuff that's in Destiny and stuff like that, or even Transformers. I feel like it, a lot of it just relies on just a little bit of everything, you know, even down to something like the FOV of the guns you have in game. Some games like to have more stretched out FOVs, so the gun, you know, appears thinner and longer on the screen for whatever reason. It's maybe the reason is they want the guns to be less obtrusive on the screen so that you can see more of the actual gameplay and game stuff that's going around. But then the gun feels lighter. It feels skinnier and longer and just doesn't feel as heavy and as good. You know, we really strived for a more like squat FOV to make the guns feel chunkier and heavier in your hand. But then, you know, the animation is going to be a huge part of it. You know, when they slam that mag in there, is his hand going to kick back a little bit as well to kind of show that force? You know, I feel like holy crap, when Modern Warfare remake came out in 2019, that was just the epitome of taking video game guns and pushing those anims even a bit past what's super real to just make them feel as meaty and heavy and mean and chunky as possible. And they just freaking nailed it. They really nailed it. A lot of games have strived to try to get to that level and either gotten close or not quite and whatnot. So I think just little things like that is just, they've all got to kind of come together for that to kind of feel right. Gunplay is just everything. It's a little bit of everything, you know, all the way down to the sounds and whatnot. It's hard to just pinpoint it on one thing, especially whether or not you're using, you're making like realistic guns or something that's completely unrealistic at all. I think my answer is a little bit of everything.
No, it's tough, man. I think it's the same with environment, because I think COD's the only game that I actually had to kind of base things on realism, right? But even then, I wasn't traveling to Italy or anything, right? I had to basically, it was Google art. And most of the time, that's where you're kind of, that's how you got to be creative, right? You're just going to have to base it on references as much as possible. And that's why I feel like as a digital artist, you know, you weapon guys have less of a concern. I feel like the only time you guys that do go crazy is like the sci-fi or different guns, but like for environment, you know, not being in that scenario, this is a disingenuity, feeling like a creative artist, right? It's like I'm making this up from references, so I don't know. I guess like for me, I've always felt like a kind of poser in that way. It doesn't feel authentic. It's not, because you're supposed to be grabbing from experience and expressing it, right? That's what a creative is. An expression of the art that you experience. But because I'm kind of doing this, and because we're digital artists for entertainment, right? You know, it's all about trying to hit the deadline, that there's a disconnect for this generation of artists versus, you know, the real artists that are actually basing it off of their experiences.
Yeah, it's definitely changed and is changing for sure. Or then you get a crazy design team that wants you to change all the stuff up. Oh, like, no, I'm trying to make it like this space. That forever between art and design, it's never going to go away, but it's so needed.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure that out. I've never been able to explain that.
It's hard.
It is hard, right? Because I think out of everybody, weapon artists are probably the most in tune with their craft, because you guys are usually gun owners. You guys usually have access for reference like that. I feel like it is definitely unacceptable when you interview a weapon artist, like, I've never shot a gun in my life. It's like, all right, next, right?
Totally.
And then it becomes less and less important as a character artist, as an environment artist, that's pretty much it. All types of art, really. Even with animation, they're able to kind of use themselves as references, and they're not kind of making it up on their own. But like, but even weapon animators, I find that they're kind of referencing other animators.
Oh yes, definitely. A lot,
right? They're not out there like, no, I shot this myself. So like, you guys are definitely in a class of your own. The one thing you guys, you know, because even vehicle artists, they don't have access to any of that either.
Oh, I mean, man. Working on tanks was crazy.
You don't have tanks in your garages. It's impossible. So I've always noticed that with weapon guys. Yeah, you guys are definitely a lot more real in terms of at least entertainment artists. Just loving that craft and loving that genre more than the rest of us. So
It's cool to hear about it from an outside perspective, which I don't
That's what I've
very
noticed,
often.
man. I'm sitting there, researching Google. I look over to you guys. You're like cocking your magazine. Oh, cocking your gun, exiting your magazine and shit. See, I don't even use the right terminology. It just looks cool. It just
You
looks
called it a
cool.
magazine instead of a clip, so you're okay in my book, buddy.
There we go. Wow. Well, man, we are at the top of the hour. I want to
thank
Oh
my
you
God,
for
it went by fast.
putting the time. I love looking at your stuff, man. It's always great to kind of have you and just hearing updates overall. How can the good people find you? Your art station, Twitter, whatever. This is where I kind of shut up and let you take over.
Yeah, I mean, I actually don't do too much. I'm on Facebook and I'm on ArtStation. That's kind of about, and LinkedIn. You can just search Brad Boyles and I'll pop up on ArtStation or probably LinkedIn, Brad Boyles Art. But I think my actual ArtStation portfolio is just the normal brad.boyles at artstation.com if you want to check out that stuff. But always love to have comments and views and critiques and whatever. So,
all right, man. Yep. Well, thank you as always. It's always fun to talk to you.
Likewise.
And see you guys all next week.
Yeah, buddy.